Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Well, we're continuing with our series on the Midwest Reiki community, and one of my interests in this community is that it's young in the sense that it hasn't been around for many years, but it is really moving fast, and I really have loved their use of media, including video, to share their experiences and to also inspire others to have the similar experiences because, well, all over the United States anyway, and actually all over the world, there are veterans returning home who really could use some assistance in re-entering civilian life, but also really integrating the experiences they've had and being able to heal the things that have come up during their time in service. That's just one of their projects that's happening right now. And I'm really happy to have Heather McCutcheon with us, who is a part of the founding ladies of the Midwest Reiki community. Heather, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me and for all that you do as well.
Oh, you're welcome. It's a pleasure. So now that we're got our mutual admirations out of the way, which is good, always nice to start that way, I'd love to hear your Reiki story.
Yes, I do have a Reiki story. Like so many people, I started out on a completely different path. I went to a Big Ten school, and I came out of college and went into advertising. And I was in advertising for several years here in the city of Chicago, and it's a very competitive and very cutthroat business. And I found I didn't like that. I'm not good at office politics, and I didn't really have that Shark Tank instinct that was required to be really successful there. I was mostly confused by that. So I was very puzzled trying to figure out what I was going to do with my life if, you know, everything I had trained for was not going to be a viable career for me. And just as I was trying to figure that out, I got some injuries. I'm an athletic person. I play volleyball, and I did take a little turn playing rugby, and I hurt both of my legs a couple of weeks apart, and I was walking around with two casts, and I went into a sports rehab facility, and there was just a lot of therapy going on there, and there were thank you notes on the walls, and people were really happy to be paying money at the end of their sessions and feeling really wonderful, and it was just it was a healing environment. And it's very different from where I was spending my 9 to 5 hours. And I really felt like I'd missed the boat, that was where my calling was. And my first thought was I could change. I could be a physical therapist. But that's a, you know, 4 or 5 year program. And I didn't really have the resources for that. But a couple weeks later, I saw an ad for the Chicago School of Massage Therapy. And I quit my job. I took out a second mortgage on my condo. I marched into the admissions office with my check, ready to sign up for the 16-month massage program, having never had a massage in my life. And it turned out to be a fabulous decision. So in the massage program, we learned kinesiology, physiology, of course, how to give massages. And there was also a 3-day section on Eastern philosophy and energy, and they talked about meridians, and I've been really loving everything that I learned at the school. It was such a change, you know, now I know, have language for it. It was such a change vibrationally from my office job that I'd had to be spending time with these massage therapists, many of whom were also working with energy healing modalities. It just felt really, really good. So I liked everything about it, and although I didn't know anything about energy healing at the time, I very enthusiastically went into that section on Eastern philosophy and meridians and energy fields. But the first thing they did was they said, rub your hands together, you know, generate some heat. Now pull your hands apart Now bring them in slowly and wait till you feel the edge of an energy ball. And I'm looking around me and I'm looking at everyone, you know, with this invisible ball. And they said, now mix your energy ball with your partner's energy ball. And I looked around the room and I panic kind of swept in. I thought, oh my gosh, I quit my job and these people are crazy. So, it did not resonate with me at the time. I couldn't, having come from corporate America, was just a very different way of thinking, and I couldn't accept it. So my thinking was, I'm going to be a sports massage therapist. People are going to come into me with tight muscles. I'm going to loosen them up. It's all very tangible. That's what I'm going to do. But that's not what happened. I have been a massage therapist for about 14 years now, and I've worked on a lot of marathon runners and a lot of Ironman competitors and volleyball players and athletes of all kinds. But in addition to loosening up their tight muscles, I also have had some incredible energetic experiences. And I didn't recognize them at first. I didn't know what was happening. I was inspired by a number of my clients to do a triathlon myself, just a little mini triathlon. And as I was training for that, I started to have episodes of heart palpitations, where my heart would just start pounding very erratically and I couldn't catch my breath. And it was very scary. The people in my family die of heart attacks. So wow. I thought, even though I'm fairly healthy, you know, this is a problem. And I went, I told my family there was something wrong with my heart. This had happened several times, not just one anomaly, but a number of times. And I went to my family or to my doctor, and she did an EKG, and she said, it's perfect. You're in great shape. You know, you're fine. And I said, I can't be fine. I'm having these heart, you know, I know that my heart's very important. This is a serious issue. And she said, there's nothing I can do for you. Go home. So I realized that I was left to, you know, study this on my own. And I started to pay much closer attention to when and where these episodes were happening, as I had in my mind associated it with my training, that I'm, you know, running, you know, 5 and 6 miles for the first time in my life. This is perhaps associated with that. But I recognize this not happening when I was running. It was not happening after I was running. It was happening exclusively in my office. And it was happening exclusively in my office when I was working on a runner and I had my forearm planted in the back of their hip muscles. Runners get very tight hips and quads and hamstrings, and, you know, all the upper leg muscles get very tight. And I spend a lot of time leaned over with my forearm planted in those tight muscles. And that's when these episodes were occurring. And I still didn't grasp what was going on. I still was applying everything I know about anatomy and, you know, Newtonian physics. You know, well, maybe my valve is under duress when I'm tilted over at this angle and it's causing my heart to flutter in this uncomfortable, disturbing way. But then I got to the point in my training where my hip was very tight, and I went to go see a very experienced massage therapist, and he planted his forearm in the back of my hip. And he said, oh my gosh, you have so much energy stored up in here. And I said, why do you say that? And he said, because my heart's pounding out of my chest and I can't breathe. And my jaw just hit the floor. So here I thought, you know, I was facing death, about to fill out my last will and testament, thinking I was going to have a heart attack. And it turned out I was just taking energy out of my client's tight muscles, traveling up my arm, through my chest, down, out my feet into the ground, and throwing my heart out of rhythm. Wow, so that was
interesting.
Yeah, that was a big watershed moment for me. That I grasped, okay, we have energy fields, we're sharing energy, this is the way the world works. But I still did not consider that that was a way that I could help people. I still thought that this was like a side effect. And I, of course, had to eat crow and pan back in my mind, what did they tell me in that 3-day class in massage school about energy fields? And I remembered them saying, you know, pretend you're a lightning rod and just let it go through you. And I did that and it helped. But it was still a couple years later before I realized that this could be applied to really, really help people. And that was after, you know, as so many other people come into this work, after I had experienced some pretty severe trauma of my own. I had been dating a man that I thought I was going to marry, and he's a executive in a big corporation here in Chicago. And I just thought that he was spending a lot of time working. And I didn't see him as often as I would have liked. And it turns out that his family comes from a long line of mobsters. and he was not spending time at the office. And that was incredibly traumatic as I brought that relationship to a close and was heartbroken and was confused and was terrified and was being followed around the city and stalked. And I had a dark night of the soul as a result of that. Just everything turned upside down and I had to reevaluate the world and my place in it. And during that time, I sought out comfort and help in any way, any form, any source. And I ended up being on the receiving end of some incredibly powerful healing experiences. And that's when I realized there's a lot of people that are really, really hurting in this world. And you cannot see by looking at them what they're going through. And these energy healing modalities are so powerful and so helpful and helped me get through that. And obviously I could recognize that this individual was very traumatized and unbalanced himself and that he would benefit from energy healing. And that's when I just changed my thinking and I realized, you know, we have to get this information to as many people as possible because it helps not only on an individual level, but as people can heal from their trauma, it helps families, it helps communities and can help society as a whole if people just knew that this was available. So that's what motivated me to really want to share what I learned with as many people as possible. And I'm actually writing a book about that experience of the healing experiences and the trauma that I went through in hopes that I can help other people find a way out of whatever dark place they found themselves in. So that's it's kind of how I got on board with the whole learn Reiki, practice Reiki, teach as many people Reiki as you can, reach out into the world and offer Reiki to as many people as you can.
So where in this experience did you meet Reiki?
Well, I actually dabbled around in a few different modalities. You know, I had my massage practice, so people were teaching me different techniques and I was reading books and trying things and having some really powerful experiences, but several of them were kind of unpleasant. My visual for working with people who held trauma was that I was going to vacuum that out of them into myself. So I was having, you know, in my office with helping people, but having, you know, crying and feeling sick, like I was, you know, like I was going to vomit and, you know, getting these waves of their emotions. And obviously anybody who works with energy knows that that's not how you do it. And it wasn't until I took a Reiki class that someone suggested that I realized, oh, this energy comes through me into them. There's no backwash my direction. And obviously then it clicked that was a much healthier and safer way to do it. And just all the other things that I had learned about energy just kind of came together, as a result of that Reiki class. So instead of incorporating a few random techniques, and I didn't really know what I was doing, I felt like now I have this proper foundation, from which to think about this and incorporate this into my work. So I started offering it to my clients and they loved it. And many of my clients who had come to me for sports massage now come to me for Reiki and recognize the benefits of that. And that's been really great to watch and share with them as well.
Oh, great. Wonderful. So, I would love, to hear more about your Reiki experience. Like I see that you're very general about it and it would be, I don't know. Did you meet your Reiki master through, how did you find Reiki?
It was actually a woman who had taught me a Donna Eden chakra clearing technique. It took me a very long time to even say chakra with a straight face. Again, coming from my corporate background, that just sounded so hokey to me.
Yes, I understand.
Yeah. So she had taught me this technique and I have always approached things fairly scientifically that, you know, I'm not going to believe this because someone tells me. I will try it and we'll see what happens and then we'll decide what's what. So she showed me what to do and I sent out an email to my clients and said, you know, does anybody want to try this? And I'm sure that the people who received this email did not understand what I was talking about and perhaps thought I was offering them some free massage technique. Several people offered and one woman came in and she'd been a client of mine for years, a massage client of mine for years. And I said, you know, so here's what I'm going to do. And at this point I had had a number of experiences of waves of energy coming through my body. I'm fairly empathic. So I was feeling people's emotions and I was feeling the nausea and I was feeling, you know, the energy, but I wasn't feeling anything in my hands. And this was a point where I was trying to redirect, you know, I wanted to be using my intention. So I wanted to feel something in my hands as if I was causing, you know, causing something instead of just being, you know, caught in the blast. So I said, you know, this is what I'm going to do. And if you could just share with me what your experience is, and we're just going to kind of talk through this, and hopefully I'm hoping I'm going to have some experience in my hands. I'm hoping while I'm now intentionally doing this, she's going to have some experience of it as well. And we were going to compare notes. And what happened was, I was working my way up through her chakras, and she went into convulsions, actually. And it scared me. And she said she was fine. She wasn't experiencing anything unpleasant, but it looked traumatic to me. And now, of course, I'm familiar with how, you know, sometimes when energy moves out through the meridians, it will cause some muscle twitching. Our muscles are triggered by, you know, electromagnetic impulses. So that all makes sense now. But at the time, it did not.
Right.
So we got through that. And then I moved up to her heart chakra. And again, I was kind of picturing I'm going to vacuum this out. And I was crying. I thought I was going to be sick. I had a panic attack at her heart chakra. And then up at her throat chakra, she said, I'm seeing a movie, I'm screaming, and no one's helping me. No one's coming to my aid. And I knew a little bit about chakras, but she knew nothing about them. And I asked her, you know, do you have any idea what happened here? Because this was way more than I bargained for, and I don't know how to put this into context. I would like to learn from this. And she was gracious enough to share with me that she had been raped as a child by a neighbor, repeatedly from the age of 7 to the age of 12. And, that when ultimately she told her parents when she was 12, had reached a level of maturity that she realized she had some choices in the matter and that she could maybe put this behavior to a stop. She told her parents, and her parents' response was, you know, well, gosh, that doesn't sound so good, but we have a lot of friends here in this community, and this sounds like a scandal. So why don't we just pretend this didn't happen, and let's don't talk about this again. And that was horrifying to me as a, you know, it was horrifying. And I recognized immediately that that all those experiences I felt when I was at her heart chakra, the panic, the vomiting, the anxiety, was exactly what it would feel like to be in that position as a child and be living in fear and dread that's what your day would hold for you on any given time.
Right.
So then, of course, her throat chakra with I'm yelling and no one's listening to me, no one's responding. Everything corresponded to what the descriptions of the chakras as I had been given. So here was my first time out of the box having this incredible, you know, experience and not really understanding what was happening. But I have come over time to recognize that the universe will give you metaphysical breadcrumbs and let you know which direction to walk. And I knew that was my sign. This is the way I'm going. So I'm going to be working with chakras. So I went back to my chakra, the woman who had taught me this, and I said, here's what happened. And she said, oh my gosh, that's incredible that you were able to move that much energy. But, you know, now you're going to have to learn to protect yourself or you're going to get really sick. And I thought she might have mentioned that earlier, but this is where this part of the story unfolded. And then ultimately she's the one who suggested I go take a Reiki class. So I think I looked online and I found a Reiki teacher. We have a center here in Chicago that teaches Reiki. And I went there and signed up for a class, and I went through the classes as quickly as I could. I just was eating it up, and I had already had so many experiences I was able to incorporate that I didn't question anything I was learning. As I said, it just mostly put everything into perspective and into an organizational form that I could, you know, better understand what was going on. So it was very helpful for everything that had gone on before. And now that I had this, you know, this name for it, that several people, you know, the community is more aware of Reiki than some of the other terms. I thought this is a good platform to go out and share this with the world. This is a word that people are recognizing. This is what I'm going to do. So I devoted myself to that. And I still do workshops wherever people will have me. Yoga studios, meditation centers, chiropractors offices, health centers, health fairs. I've been to a couple colleges, a high school, a hospital. Anywhere where a crowd can gather and people will listen to me talk, I will talk about chakras and try and have people have a tangible experience of their energy field so that they recognize the very tangible connection between mind, body, and spirit. Because obviously, you know, we can all talk till we're blue in the face, but until someone has an experience of it, and I was guilty of that myself, I didn't feel the ball in my massage therapy, you know, Eastern philosophy class, so I didn't believe it. Uh-huh. But when people take the workshops and they have a powerful experience, at least it gets them thinking. They may not rush out and sign up for a Reiki class on day one or sign up for a Reiki session on day one, but I feel like it definitely gets them thinking and understanding, beginning to understand. And then even if I'm, you know, one part in that chain of information, that the next time they hear the word Reiki, there will be some recognition. And maybe the third or the fourth time they hear it out in the world, they will make a decision, you know, to move towards that. And I'm really happy to be part of that chain, even if I'm not the, you know, the tipping point for them.
Right, right. Well, that's a great way to look at it. And I hear that you are using a lot of your education in your marketing, and in some way, in my estimation, using it in a way that really is beneficial. This may be a little digression, but as a consumer, I sometimes am really horrified by marketing strategies and the place in which people seem to market a lot of things, which is mostly creating a need that isn't really there, then creating the fear that you might be missing something, and then, of course, having the perfect solution, right?
Yeah.
So this kind of logical thinking just drives me crazy. But yeah. What I hear you saying in where you're going is just to give people an opportunity to plant a seed, having an opportunity to plant a seed in people that if it really meets and resonates with them, then they'll pursue it, maybe not immediately, but at some time in their life. And I see that more and more in my Reiki classes.
Yeah. And that was my experience as well. I was given that information. I sometimes wonder, you know, in terms of what my plan was for my life, you know, my life path. I was in massage school and this information was presented to me 15 years ago and I turned my nose up at it and I went on to have an incredibly traumatic experience. And I wonder if I had latched on sooner, if I could have avoided that little problematic time there. You know, the universe came down and said, okay, we're going to be moving you over here into this energy thing one way or another. So these lessons are going to get nastier and nastier until you figure this out. But yeah, it was there. And I had had an inkling that that existed. And so when it came up the second and third time, it was more familiar. Yeah. But yeah, gosh, you'd really like to have people learn that before it comes down the hard way.
Well, you know, yes and no. The thing that I realize about human beings, which is really frustrating, especially when I experience it myself, is that we don't actually learn very well from other people's experiences, and it takes an experience that we can term unpleasant to get our attention, and then if we really are paying attention. Just like in the plant world, if there's poison ivy around, there's another plant that is an antidote that grows very nearby. And nature takes care of that. And it's also true, I feel like, in our human nature, if there's something that is happening to us that feels unpleasant or painful, there's an antidote very nearby. And we just have to not run around in fear trying to find that, but to just look and see what has been given already. And I feel like that's what you did. And it's a great example of that, of not going off and in search of something to cure yourself, but to be able to just look around and say, okay, this isn't working, so I'm going to go someplace that feels like it'll work for me. Did it feel like that to you?
I recognize, you know, Chicago is a very big city and there's a lot of subcultures here. And I had been involved in my athletic, you know, socially active subculture. Right. And I went and explored some other places and I found them and they were incredibly healing for me. I didn't know that analogy about the poison ivy. That's really interesting. But yeah, it does seem to work like that, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's really interesting. So, of course, you know, we don't want our friends, our neighbors, and our fellow human beings to suffer. But there's a part of our being alive that feels like pain is not the enemy and death is not the enemy. And this is something that I've had to learn through my Reiki experience, but also it's much harder to take it into one's life.
Yeah.
And apply it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I, you know, in as much as I look back and think if I had done this differently, I might have avoided that difficulty. I also think, you know, all those experiences are incredibly educational. And I don't think I would be as motivated to be doing what I'm doing now if that had not occurred with regards to some of these underserved populations. I would not have learned that there are people that are suffering that are not necessarily, you know, homeless. There are corporate executives that are hurting terribly, and you can't, you never know from looking at them. And that was an important thing for me to figure out. And that has shaped the way I am in the world. And I, you know, I'm grateful for that.
That's wonderful because, I've had some in the classes that I've taught, and they're one of the feelings that they often talk about is feeling trapped. Like, okay, they've done all the things that they were supposed to do, and then in theory it was supposed to be rewarding, but it's not.
Right. Yep.
So now what? And of course, one's invested all this time, energy, and money into getting where they've gotten, and you know, you were really brave and took a great leap. And again, you know, if you hadn't been on crutches or whatever your little apparatus were, you might not have slowed down enough to figure it out.
Yeah, and I did catch a lot of flack for making that decision. My family said, "Are you crazy? What are you thinking? You're going to starve. How are you going to earn a living?" I got all kinds of flack for that. And even in the years since, because, you know, being a massage therapist and a Reiki practitioner is not the most lucrative job in the world. And I've heard over and over, get a job. And I know that this is my work in the world, and this is what we're doing. Stop arguing with me.
Well, you know, the word vocation always is very useful, but it's not often very valued.
Yeah.
And, yeah. You know, that's just an interesting place of our society. And, you know, it seems like people like you are really allowing, what could I say, the normal world to embrace vocation as a viable alternative to living.
Yeah.
So you're a pioneer. That's great.
Oh, well, you know, one of the things I've been incredibly grateful for is that there was a healing community in place. Obviously, a lot of people have made this their career long before Molly and Gina and Tracy and I came along. And we have used, you know, William Rand does some incredible work and has a huge library of resources available that we've availed ourselves of and used to help spread the word. A lot of people have done a lot of work. You have done a lot of work. Everybody that's brought Reiki down the pike has done a lot of work and experienced different levels of pushback. And we felt really fortunate that we're now in a place where we have social media, we have these online presences where we can communicate and have conversations in front of the general population about Reiki. And I mean, even when I told you, it took me a long time to say chakra with a straight face, the idea of getting on the internet in front of 150 Facebook friends and talking about chakras was not going to happen.
Right.
But here we are a few years later. And right. having had this nurturing community and the support of everyone who came before us to teach us and stand behind us, we are able to do that now. And that's made a huge difference. And we still run into people who have been practicing Reiki for 20 or 30 years, have much more Reiki experience than we do, but are afraid to talk about it publicly. And so hopefully what we're helping to do is make this, a household term, that this is something you talk about. This is a wonderful thing. This is not something to keep under wraps and be secretive about. So that's maybe, and that's just a function of the time that we've come about, that we've come into this and what's going on with technology right now. So we've been really grateful for that and certainly recognize all the work that went in and trial and tribulation before we even got here.
Right. So how, so when you speak about that, what I go to is this very interesting paradox, which, I find my life in Reiki highlights paradox, and I think it's because life is full of paradoxes. That's the nature of it. And this paradox is that, from the culture that I grew up in, there were two or three different factors. Number one, in the Japanese culture, things that touch a person very deeply are also very private. Mm-hmm. And there's a part of that essence that I see in myself. So there's this psychological framework called Johari's window. And you draw a rectangle, and then you make four squares in this rectangle. One is your public self, one's your private self, one's your blind side, the part of you that everybody else sees but you don't. Mm-hmm. And then there's this part of you that's potential. Mm. And what's really interesting for me is that when I first drew this, and it's kind of a free flow thing, I realized that I had a very big private part of myself. Most of my window was private. And the feedback that I was given by the other members of the group is that I also had that part of that private place was a defense mechanism. And that was really interesting. So then there was a time, there have been all these years I've been in this process of trying to select, okay, is this really meant to be private, or is this my defense mechanism because I'm afraid that people will make fun of me, or in my own opinion, this is just like a figment of my imagination, or, those kinds of things. And then there's this other part where having your hand slapped by society as a kind of nutcase, is also very big around the world in all of our different cultures. So it's interesting to weave all these things together to honor the dignity of and the specialness of our own private spiritual path, where at the same time being able to be open to the people who are appropriate. So that's what I've gotten to, is to know that these different places are in myself, but when I want to share it, I have to really pay attention to who's listening. So,
yeah.
So if I'm in a Reiki class, of course, I share a lot of my personal path. If I'm on an airplane and somebody says, "And what do you do for a living?" I'm not as open.
Yeah.
And I just wonder where you are in this paradox.
Well, I used to be a lot more conservative in the messages that I put out, and I'm not anymore. As I said, I feel much more comfortable now, and part of that is the wonderful community that's come together and the space we've all created to support each other. That it's not right. just me talking to the world. There's a chorus of us communicating with the world.
Right.
And I have two kind of mantras, two quotes that I, repeat to myself when I start to feel my motivation ebbing. And one of them is, Martin Luther King Jr., who says, those who love peace must organize as effectively as those who love war. And I feel like that's some of what we're doing with the Midwest Reiki community, just really getting organized and getting buttoned down and, you know, gathering numbers and being purposeful and, you know, moving towards our vision in a very organized and collective way. And there's so much power in that. And at the same time, I feel like we have something so wonderful to offer. I've had a lot of doors shut in my face by people who did not recognize what I was offering, were looking for ulterior motives from me, just weren't ready for the information. And that has the potential to be very frustrating and demoralizing, as you said. So the other quote that I keep reminding myself of is, you know, you can find it in many forms, but I like the one channeled by Esther Hicks, who channels Abraham. And it says, a messenger can only deliver a message to someone who is a vibrational match to that message. So don't wear yourself out saying things to people who can't hear you. And that way, I don't take it personally. I'm going to just keep casting a wide net and talk to everyone. And the people that it resonates with will respond to me. And those will be opportunities and collaborative efforts that will benefit a lot of people. And those people who are not ready may be ready at some point down the road. And then it will have just been part of the communicate, you know, part of the chain of the message that they're getting over time. But it's helped me to not become discouraged or question myself.
Great. So I would love it if you could repeat the last quote. What, Heather McCutcheon? Is that who you were?
This is Esther Hicks.
Oh, Esther Hicks.
Yeah, she channels Abraham. So her... I just saw this posted somewhere, but I loved it, and I wrote it down, and I posted it in my house. Great.
So if you could say it a little bit more slowly so that it would go inside, that would be great. And a lot of times people who are listening, are English is not their first language.
Okay. Yeah, the quote is, a messenger can only deliver a message to someone who is a vibrational match to the message. So don't wear yourself out saying things to people who can't hear you.
Great. I mean, that's a wonderful, because we often do, and then we are disappointed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. So this is your... This is what motivated and got you together. And so I'm just wondering, what were you the seed of the idea of the Midwest Reiki community, or was this a spontaneous kind of happening? Or
I wasn't. Actually, of the four of us, Tracy and I are the two teachers, and Gina and Molly, I assume, will be, you know, becoming teachers soon. We're hopeful of that. So Tracy actually had been doing Reiki for longer than I, and I already had a community of students and saw this vision that, you know, we're going to get people together and wanting to be collaborative, not just Tracy's students with Tracy's students, but all the students together. So she called me and said, you know, here's what I'd like to do. I have the space and I'd like to, you know, get students together, and I'm reaching out to teachers. And I had been, you know, wanting, to have a practice space for my students. So that really appealed to me. But I already had had the wheels turning that I was going to try and rally my students to form some kind of outreach. And so this provided an opportunity for both on a grander scale than I originally had been thinking. So I jumped at the chance. And, you know, we've got our people together and started holding events. We held shares. We did some educational. We called people in from other modalities. I did a little presentation. Tracy does presentations. We call in craniosacral practitioners and acupuncturists and people who work with crystals and people who work with essential oils. But I remember back when we first sat down and were, you know, it was really just going to be her students and my students and some other, you know, teachers in the area, trying to think about what our name would be. And I suggested something along the lines of, you know, the Chicago Reiki group. And she said, oh, no, the Midwest Reiki community. This is going to be huge. So she already had a vision that this was going to be much bigger than, you know, I was thinking it was going to be this little local group. And then so we started doing that, and Molly and Gina came along right away and lent their enthusiasm and their ideas and their constant presence and voice and energy. And it just, over the last year and a half, has grown into something bigger than any of us individually initially thought it could be, based on, you know, our contributions and all the energy of all the people that have joined the community and their enthusiasm and all the wonderful experiences we're having and people's willingness to pitch in. Gina has done a tremendous job. You mentioned our web presence. That's all Gina. She has a background in advertising as well. And she's just had, you know, hours and hours and hours of work creating logos and the website and the blog and our Twitter account and constantly, you know, researching and gathering information and channeling it out, you know, to our community and as far and wide as she can, making connections, bringing our virtual presence together and keeping people engaged. And, you know, we wouldn't have the attention that we have or the reach, the audience that we have without, you know, we wouldn't have any of that without her. So that's all her contribution, which if we had to pay for that on the open market, we would have already spent a fortune based on the hours that she's put in just as a labor of love. So that's been incredible. And Molly has experience in event planning and social services, and she just brings so much to the table with her consistency and her voice and her efforts. And she's been so instrumental just across the board, making our various ideas, you know, come to successful fruition with her participation and effort and forethought and her knowledge. And she also has contributed to the greater vision because she spent time in the Peace Corps. And she had the idea that Peace Corps volunteers could help spread Reiki to places in need across the globe. So something along the lines of, you know, Doctors Without Borders, only with Reiki. And so all of our contributions have been, you know, adding to the bigger picture that we're all aiming towards and putting our energy towards, you know. And again, what the group of people that come to the shares, you know, whenever we have a new person, almost every share, there's one or two new people that have maybe gone to a Reiki class and gone home and know they've learned something wonderful, but they don't have a context for it in their life. Their immediate circle is not, you know, it's not resonating with them for whatever reason, or not yet, or it's just too new, or they don't know. So here's this new student who's, you know, kind of wanting to pursue this and not really having any avenues. So every time we get a new person who's, their eyes light up, you know, here's these people doing Reiki and they're talking about it openly, and I can come here and have these experiences and practice, and these people are behind me, and here's events I can participate in. And that's just so incredibly rewarding for all of us.
Great. Well, I agree with you about all of the media things that you all have done, because I'm involved in a project and we don't have the benefit of having in-house service. So it is very expensive and needed. It's really important in this day and age, because I realize how much I don't know now, which is really interesting.
Yeah, and I mentioned my earlier career in advertising. The very first job I had out of college was working in the production department for the U.S. Hot Rod Association. So I made radio and television commercials for monster truck shows and tractor pulls. So at the time, I was completely a fish out of water. But we went out to that vet event, and I've been documenting, you know, one of my contributions is that I just want to document everything so that we can share it via Gina's network. Right. And so I knew how to get B-roll, and I, you know, we're going to get these interviews, and I knew how to piece it together. And I just had to chuckle that my time making commercials for monster truck shows has really paid off down the road.
All right.
They were monster able to produce shows. These videos, that, you know, have been really inspiring. We got calls from, or we got some emails from people across the country saying, you know, we saw this video, we'd like to implement a similar program with our VA. What do we do?
Right.
And, you know, my vision would be for our group down the road is to be a resource of, you know, like a toolkit for motivated parties, for inspired parties to, you know, get information and get documentation so that they can go pitch these kinds of programs. So when I was researching Reiki and veterans, I came across a lot of information geared towards Reiki practitioners talking about someone's process. You know, here's what I did. Here's how I felt. here's how PTSD can impact, you know, or Reiki can impact people with PTSD. And it was all really valuable information, but the documentation was geared towards an audience of Reiki practitioners. That's not something that you would turn around and hand to an administrator at the Veterans Administration. Right. That I could not find. That I had to create. And I would love to have a library of that kind of documentation so that people could log on and download something and just customize it with the name of their group or their company or their Reiki, whatever, and march into their VA and have a professional presentation already put together. And the ease of that, I think, would really facilitate these kind of programs. And of course, you know, veterans has been one of our go-to groups, but we don't want to be known for just veterans. We want to be known for outreach in general. Right. So the homeless, victims of domestic violence, victims of sex trafficking. And I personally also want to go into the jails and into the prisons and be working with perpetrators of sex trafficking and perpetrators of violent crimes, because as we're recognizing, these are people who have been traumatized and victims become perpetrators. And I want to be working at this from both ends of the spectrum. Right. To, you know, heal our society as a whole.
Well, there are a lot of groups in my history of Reiki that have done this work, but in very small programs and mostly very successful. And I'd like to just go back to the vets, because I feel like in my sort of traveling through the Reiki community as I do, I've had a chance to meet quite a few people who are working with vets, with the Wounded Warrior Program, and so on. And what I find really interesting is that there is a layer of don't talk about it that is extremely intense. And I find that kind of a big question mark, because it seems like if it helps a lot of these veterans, then why isn't it more well known? Or yeah. Why don't they want to talk about it? So, for instance, there's a program in El Paso, in Fort Bliss, that's had Reiki involvement in their post-traumatic stress disorder program and returning vet program for years. And I can't somehow get into talk with them. And there was a woman in Denver who worked for the Veterans Administration Hospital, and she was asked to go in and do Reiki on an individual basis and would have liked to have created a program within the Veterans Hospital, but it was not really possible at the time. So there's some really interesting inroads that are happening, and I love the video, and I feel like this will have impact because it's so out there, you know, as opposed to being undercover, so to speak.
Well, I referenced before that we are coming into this in an era when we have access to social media and these things can be spread instantaneously around the world. That video got reposted on blogs, Reiki blogs in Australia and Portugal and Manchester, England, where people, you know, are watching the video and thinking, this is fantastic. We need to do that. And as you said, there's a lot of people who came up with this idea before we did, and we used a lot of their work in planning our program and preparing ourselves for it. And people have written articles on Reiki for PTSD. But you're right, it has been secretive. And I wish it was much more out there. I wish this was, you know, as commonplace as a Coca-Cola commercial, that we would see that this is available and going on. And anybody who wants to help veterans, instead of writing a check, which so many people do, which is helpful, but you could take a Reiki class, you could come to one of these events, and you could experience firsthand what's happening and have that incredible exchange with another human being, which is just such, you know, so much more valuable a connection and experience than writing a check to someone. So that would be my hope, that this would become so commonplace and so pervasive in our culture that it would be a given that people would go do that.
Uh-huh. Interesting. So, is the event that you filmed in Chicago, is this an ongoing event? Like, does it happen you know, once every so many months, or was it a one-time thing, or?
It was a stand down, and stand downs occur through veterans administrations around the country. So the ones that we have in Chicago happens twice a year. There's the one in the summer outside, which is the one that we documented. And then there's a winter event as well. And we went last year to the summer event, and nobody knew what Reiki was. It's a service fair for veterans. So
right.
for homeless veterans, uh-huh. which they define as someone who doesn't have their own home. So these would be people staying with friends or, you know, whatever right. their situation is.
Right.
But they offer them medical care, and they could get haircuts, they get a meal. They get clothes, there's musical entertainment there. It's a reunion of sorts. But for men without resources, many of whom are suffering from, you know, if not physical ailments, which are obviously prevalent in people coming home from, you know, places where there's military action going on, but also PTSD is just so common. So they have, I think they had acupuncturists at this stand down. And so they said we could come, but they didn't really know what Reiki was, and they didn't really pay attention to us. Last year when we came, I had four or five volunteers, and we, you know, set up a little sign, and we put our mats and our towels down on the ground. We didn't get a booth. They said, go over there under the tree. So we did. And we worked on, you know, maybe 20, 25 people. And they enjoyed it, and we had great experiences with them. But I really wished that I had documented it better. And so this year, when I asked for volunteers, our group had grown bigger. We had a better communication network, and we got 15 people wanted to come out and help.
Wow.
So we showed up, yeah, and they remembered us from last year, and they greeted us warmly. And the first year when we went, there were even a couple kind of inappropriate comments from the men, many of whom have served overseas and seen all manner of hands-on, quote-unquote, services.
Right.
But after the first couple guys tried it, they literally kind of stood guard. And when men made snide comments, they would say, no, you don't understand. You need to try this. That's not what's happening here. So they helped us.
Wow.
And this year there was none of that. This year, everyone was excited to see us. You know, they swarmed over. The men had come last year, came again, because there was a crowd was drawn. And ultimately, we had the medical staff from inside the building where we were not permitted to set up. Were coming out asking us what we were doing and saying, everyone is talking about this. What's going on out here? And I've been invited to do a presentation to a group of, I think they've put together an alternative modality group within the VA. And I'm going to go do a presentation, and we're going to propose that we set up a regular schedule where our volunteers will come down and work on the vets. And ideally that would lead to teaching classes there. We'll see how it goes. But it took perseverance, and you know, the first year was a little iffy. We weren't quite sure what to expect. It started off a little bit rough, but you know, that's what you have to do. So, yeah. So stand downs are available across the country, and any Reiki practitioners that want to, you know, implement that. I mean, I mostly just called and said, "Can we come out?" And they said yes. But if anybody wanted to contact me about you know, how to get that going, I'd be happy to share any information that I have.
Wonderful. That's great. Thank you. That was really inspiring. And the thing about PTSD, I can never, I am hoping I'm saying the right number, letters.
Yep.
I just wonder, because of course, when I grew up, being a little bit older than you, people had, you know, I had friends of mine in school, in grammar school, that, whose fathers had come back from World War II and who were obviously suffering, well, they called it shell shock back then.
Right.
I think. And, that's really interesting. And I just wonder if all veterans or all people who are in the military who go to combat zones, if there isn't some degree of this disorder, that's not quite the right word, condition maybe, that happens just because in our world today, so this is my theory, our world today, because of social media, because of the telephone, because we travel a lot, a lot of us travel a lot, we're actually really familiar that the people in other cultures are really people. They're not like lesser than people. They're not people because they speak German. They obviously aren't cultured, or they aren't like us. We have created a global culture. So then when we go into a war zone kind of thing, what we're doing is we're actually forcing ourselves as human beings to override our natural instinct, which is to love each other.
Exactly.
And I just find this to be so horrifying in some way, that people, and I'm not saying this to the vets, that you did a bad thing. I'm just saying that it must be amazingly difficult to live that kind of paradox and to be able to come back into a world that expects you then to just turn that off somehow.
Yeah.
I mean, how confusing.
Yeah. Yeah. But the VA has made huge strides in, you know, if you go to their website, they will list statistics on PTSD. There's a bunch of information there. They're not hiding that that's the case. They're saying, here's the deal. And that's what makes it okay for us to approach them and say that we can help with this. So it really is a collective effort of their admitting, you know, this is a problem that we're experiencing and we're looking for solutions, and then, you know, people stepping up and offering solutions. So if there's been progress, it's in the transparency of, gosh, here's a consequence of these actions that have taken place.
That's great. Wonderful. And thank you very much for, I don't know, just being able to open this door. Because I think that lots of people who are civilians would like to reach out. And, you know, a dollar, you know, like giving money to the guys who stand on street corners is difficult because there's all kinds of things that come into play. But reaching out and really making a difference in their life feels much more exciting and inspiring.
Yeah, and I know obviously the people who listen to your show are Reiki channels and Reiki advocates, and they know as well as I do, as I've learned over the past few years, when you're working with Reiki, it really is true, the old adage that it's better to give than to receive. It is so incredibly rewarding, and I think about, you know, back in my previous life when I would, you know, spend a lot of my time partying and doing whatever I was doing, and now to spend a Saturday helping people in this way and working with incredible, soulful, wonderful people, and sharing Reiki with them is one of the most incredible experiences of my life. And I want everyone to be able to have that, not just from the receiver perspective, but from the giver, you know, from the other side of that equation. Look what you can offer people, and you get so much back from it.
Definitely, because these people who have been over there and who have put their life on the line, come back with an amazing wisdom that we don't have and we can't have because we haven't done that.
Right.
And so there's really this wonderful opportunity to really, well, I just think of the word from Hawaii, the Hawaiian pidgin language. You know, in Hawaii, they say, let's talk story. And it means, like, let's share with each other our lives. And it's a really beautiful feeling to be able to do that. And because there's an underlying understanding that everybody gains benefits from that talk story experience. And it feels like that's what you all are doing.
Well, yeah, I really feel like this is that Reiki and all the effort that everyone is making around this is part of this 2012 shift and this raising of consciousness. And a big part of that is, you know, connecting with people and empathizing with them and sharing their experience. It's creating a bigger perspective for all of us, which we all then benefit from. So just like you said, sharing story. And the internet has made that possible, and people's efforts have made that possible. And, you know, in as much as people are gravitating towards those things that resonate with them, even just anybody who's willing to hear this message is contributing to that process. So good things are happening. We're really excited to be a part of it.
Well, beautifully said. Thank you. And this is the end of the show.
It was great having this opportunity. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.